Good afternoon. You're listening to Politics in Action on CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm Anna, bringing you the latest on local political news. On today's episode, I will be discussing what seemed like a never-ending battle has finally ended with the three North American leaders signed the USMCA deal. Exciting news as Montreal just elected their first female mayor. And finally, I will be recapping the main points from Legault's first speech at the National Assembly. The road to rewriting the North America Free Trade Agreement was a battle. Donald Trump said Friday as Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto joined him for a signing ceremony on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Buenos Aires. Nevertheless, battles sometimes make great friendships, Trump said, as the other two leaders looked on. Official text from the deal, Trump has named the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, has now been signed by all three countries. Canada will change the order of the countries in its legal version of the name, putting Canada first, C-U-S-M-A, and likewise the Mexicans named the treaty T-M-E-U-C, which is translated to Tratado México, Estados Unidos y Canadá, putting their name in first place. Trudeau referred to the deal Friday as the new NAFTA, but Trump felt very strongly about changing the agreement's name when his administration reworked the deal. He continued to refer to NAFTA as terrible on social media after signing, saying it will soon be gone. In remarks at the signing ceremony in Argentina, Trudeau said this signing lifts the uncertainty that surrounded the acrimonious 15-month negotiation process, an uncertainty that only would have gotten worse if the parties had not reached a new agreement, he said. Both Trump and Trudeau noted the deal was signed on Peña Nieto's final day in office and thanked him for his work. The leaders wanted to guarantee the agreement as soon as possible, since the new Mexican president that was elected during the summer was officially sworn in just last week. Foreign Minister Christine Freeland told reporters after the ceremony that the deal resulted from Canada acting with resolve at the negotiating table and remaining united at home in the face of widespread disruption in the Canadian economy if a deal affecting over $2 billion in trade was put in jeopardy. She thanked Canadians for their support after what was been at times a difficult process. The signing followed days of speculations as to whether Canada would sign the USMCA deal at all, and if it did, whether it would have signed by a more junior official than the Prime Minister. On the one hand, Canada wanted to register its displeasure at signing a free trade deal when in fact there are tariffs on $48 billion worth of goods traded between the US, Canada, and Mexico. Those tariffs begin with U.S. action against imported steel and aluminum, using national security as a justification under an obscure U.S. law from 1962. Canada and Mexico, in turn, retaliated with tariffs against the U.S. All those tariffs remain in place as the deal was signed, much to the displeasure of both Canadian and Mexican governments. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer told reporters after the ceremony that the U.S. believes its tariff protections have been successful, even in the face of a World Trade Organization challenges from Canada and others over its use of national security provisions to justify tariffs that protect and prop up sometimes less competitive domestic industries. Freeland was asked about the Americans continuing to claim their tariffs are legitimate. He stated that Canada disagrees with that point of view. Both the White House and the Mexican government said openly in the days before the signing ceremony that would have involved the leaders of the three countries. Only Canada expressed their reluctance, saying there was still some difficulties in the text, hinting it was reluctant to have a celebratory signing of a free trade deal married by tariffs that suggest anything but true free trade. In the end, the ceremony was brief, with short remarks from all three leaders before they sat together at the table and signed. The audience then rose to leave, obscuring the view of each country's responsible ministers as they continued to sign other documents related to the agreement. They included a critical side letter on the automotive sector that could ensure Canada avoids punitive tariffs on its car exports to the U.S. if the Trump administration proceeds with threats to begin taxing foreign vehicles and automotive parts at up to 25%. Peña Nieto, has sold the deal to his people as a victory for Mexico, saving free trade from a U.S. president who wanted to kill it. On Saturday, he will be replaced by Andrés Manuel López Obrador, a politician who represents Mexico's left and who has often questioned the value of the original NAFTA and international trade generally. Nevertheless, the incoming Mexican administration has said it will not stand in the way of the agreement negotiated by its predecessor. López Obrador had a representative in the room through the final tense weeks of the negotiations. The agreement now proceeds for ratification in each country. In Canada, implementation legislation will be drafted for Parliament, and after it is reviewed, debated, and passed, the federal cabinet will ratify the treaty. Mexican legislators will also vote on the deal, but it is expected to pass. The situation is far less certain in the U.S., where an acrimonious debate is expected thanks to Trump's unfriendly Democratic majority in the House of Representatives following November's midterm elections. Even in the U.S. Senate, its final vote may be close. Some Republican senators have been critical of Trump's trade policies, while prominent Democrats, including potential president candidate Elizabeth Warren on Thursday, have said they cannot vote for the agreement as it stands. Under the rules set for fast-tracking trade agreements through Congress, however, changes to the agreements are not supposed to be made now that our legally scrubbed text has been signed by all three countries. Lighthizer said Friday that the Americans have negotiated what they believe is a bipartisan agreement designed to win more than enough votes to pass. Valérie Plante scored a stunning upset in Montreal's mayoral election on Sunday, defeating incumbent Denise Coderre to become the first woman to win the post. In her victory speech, Plante reiterated her campaign promises, which include improving public transit and lessening road congestion, as well as adding green spaces and social housing. She told a room full of cheering supporters, "During the course of this campaign, I had one goal in mind. I wanted to put Montrealers first, and I'm not going to change that." She continued, "I'm going to put Montreal's first. I'm going to get Montreal moving again. I'm going to build safer roads for pedestrians, seniors, and cyclists." Plante was leading with over 51% of the vote, with almost all polls reporting, compared to just under 46% for Coderre. "We have made history," she tweeted. "Thank you, Montreal." She will be the first female mayor elected in Montreal in the city's 375-year history, and Montreal will be the largest North American city with a female mayor, according to CTV News. She entered municipal politics in 2013, when she won a council seat in the contest that pitted her against her former provincial cabinet minister, Louis Riel. In 2016, she was elected leader of the left-leaning party Projet Montréal. Plante began the mayoral race as a relative unknown, but opinion polls showed her steadily gaining on Coderre as the campaign continued. The mother of two, who cycles or takes public transit to work, sought throughout the campaign to present herself as less flamboyant and much more in touch with Montrealers than her opponent. Her signature campaign promise was a new 29-stop subway line that would link the city's densely populated northeast to downtown. During her victory speech, she appealed to the provincial and federal governments to partner with her on her two biggest campaign promises, the subway line and increasing social housing in the city. She stated that in Quebec and Ottawa, "I invite you to act on the strong message that Montrealers are sending to you. I know we can't do it tomorrow, but we can start working together immediately for those who need it most." Prime Minister Justin Trudeau saluted Plante's victory in a tweet late Sunday evening, writing, "Congratulations to first ever woman elected mayor of Montreal. I'm looking forward to working together on our shared priorities." The outgoing Coderre, a former Liberal MP and cabinet minister who was elected mayor in 2013, had campaigned largely on his record. He had highlighted his ambitious infrastructure renewal plan, naming an inspector general to oversee the awarding of city contracts and negotiating increased powers for the city from the province. But while Montreal's economy has boomed during his mandate, Coderre was often branded by his opponents as an arrogant leader who made hasty decisions with little consultation. He was criticized for spending millions on showy projects to celebrate the city's 375th birthday, and drew the ire of dog lovers when he introduced legislation last year to ban pit bulls from the city. In his concession speech, Coderre announced he would be leaving municipal politics, but said he remained proud of what he had accomplished. He stated, "I'm leaving with my head high. Montreal is an exceptional city. Montreal is a metropolis that is the envy of the world." In more local news, there was a surprise in Sherbrooke, where incumbent Bernard Savigny lost the mayoral race to independent candidate and real estate agent Steve Lussier. This was the first time Lussier was running for a seat in the city council. The 42-year-old campaigned on a promise of combining through the city's finances. He stated, "I feel really like I'm in my element," on Sunday night at City Hall. Lussier, originally from Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, promised he'd only seek two mandates if he was elected mayor. Savigny's defeat ends a 16-year career in municipal politics. He was first elected a councillor in 2001. The other three candidates running for mayor were Helen Pigault, Patrick Tétrault, and Denis Bellerin. The total number of seats at City Hall has gone down in this election from 19 to 14, after Sherbrooke merged several districts in 2016, trimming the number of bureaus from 6 to 4. Lennoxville was the only bureau left untouched, while others, including Brompton, lost their status. Claude Charron, who ran on a platform of preserving Lennoxville's bureau status, was elected bureau president. Charron said he worried by Lussier's lack of political experience. He said, "It will be something else. They'll have to rely heavily on councillors with experience." Lussier also isn't comfortable in English, which may be a thorn in the side of some voters in Sherbrooke's only bureau with bilingual status. But Charron said it won't pose a problem. Some 858 municipal elections were held across the province, with over 8,000 mayor or councillor jobs up for grabs. Of those, about half were already filled by election day by candidates who ran unopposed. In other news, the Bloc Québécois is voting for their next leader to the party very soon and plans for a strong comeback to Canadian politics. The party once dominated elections in Quebec, since every election between 1993 and 2008. Then the Bloc was submerged in an orange wave in 2011. In February, the party will choose its fifth leaders since its defeat 7 years ago, and is hoping that it will turn things around. Mario Bouguer, interim leader of the BQ, believes that it is good news that Yves-François Blanchet will be running in the next election to be chief of the BQ. Bouguer hopes that he will be able to reunify the party despite their tough election results. He is hopeful that the next year will be a better year for the party. He stated that citizens believe that the party has put the independents on the side of the focus, but assures that the party still stresses how important it is for the province to control its own economics as a nation. Currently, it seems as this party is alone in the movement for independence, as other political writers have stressed that the desire for a Quebec without Canada has passed its peak for many reasons. A bit of known history on the topic. The desire for Quebec's independence is an ethnic project. That of the Francophone nation composed of roughly 77% of Quebec's people sharing a common language, history, and culture, and who want to maintain its existence in North America. The project has no means otherwise. The yes voters in a referendum come mainly from this group. Favorable results of 50, 60, and 70% represent respectively 65, 78, and 91% of the region. In 1995, the result was close to 50%, representing a significant majority of this nation, but a relatively modest score compared with those expressed by other, more determined peoples in the 20th century. Because independence concerns the whole of Quebec, it must take into account the two main groups of citizens that do not form part of this nation, the Anglophones and the relatively recent immigrants, regardless of linguistic affiliation. Anglophones have always overwhelmingly voted no, and nothing suggests a reversal of that state of affairs. Immigrants are courageous people facing enormous challenges as they make their place in Canada. They seek stability. They don't need to add another adventure to their own personal one. For them, voting no is the most reasonable choice. Let us also keep in mind the small number of Aboriginal peoples who will have a large political say in this. Looking to the future, all factors converge to augment the proportion of no voters. The average age of the population is going up, and as shown in the exit polls of Scottish referendum, older people and retirees are not adventurous enough to try creating a new country. In Quebec, there are around 50,000 immigrants every year, 1 million in 20 years, 3 million in 60 years. Little by little, Quebec's cultural landscape will be transformed, further diminishing the proportion of yes voters. Emotion, not reason, motivates independence movements. There must be a cultural conflict and some form of oppression to stir people to action. When Quebec modernized, it created institutions allowing it to develop and protect its specific culture, eventually dissipating the emotional tension of the time without creating a country. The highest emotional point was the failure of the Meech Lake Accord, which led to an explosion of separatist fervor. It is hard to imagine a recurrence of that situation nowadays. Even though it is evident that there is a difference in cultures between Quebec and the rest of Canada, both sides live relative mutual indifference, not a source of major tension. Unless the rest of Canada transforms itself into a subsidiary of the Republican Party, 50 more years of boring accounting discussions about equalization payments will not generate the emotion needed to produce a country. Premier François Legault has pledged to govern Quebec with pride and audacity and dared Quebecers to embrace the kind of change he says Quebec needs. But even as he reached out to English-speaking Quebecers, inviting them to define our common future together, he said the government still intends to replace school boards with service centers despite the objections of Francophone and Anglophone boards. In his opening speech to the National Assembly delivered Wednesday, November the 28th, Legault taped into Quebecers' sense of history and pride, while at the same time pledging to break with the habits of governments past that he said have left the population poorer, feeling cynical and helpless. But getting there will take courage, he stated. He continued, "If I had to identify an adversary of the government, it would be fear," he told the House. "The fear of making mistakes, the fear of not being able, the fear of change. This fear is the opposite of audacity." As President Franklin D. Roosevelt once said in a much more dramatic context, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." In delivering his hour-long speech, Legault returned to many of his more pragmatic electoral themes, saying education, health, and the economy will be the three main priorities of his regime. He added one populist twist, saying he will govern for the people and not cave to pressures from any lobby groups, big businesses, or unions. He stressed that the new government will be the government of Quebecers, your government. Legault said education will be the number one priority of his government. He stated, "It is the future of the Quebec nation, but in the last few years, the education system has lacked love." In one major commitment, he stated, "Even if the Quebec economy slows and government revenues drop, the financing of the education system will be protected." Despite critics who said one of his main electoral promises to extend kindergarten classes to four-year-olds is impossible, Legault said he will proceed anyway because he finds such an attitude defeatist. Legault repeated his Coalition Avenir Quebec government will create a better family allowance program at the same time as making government more humane and flexible. For the taxpayer, he said, he will proceed with the creation of a flat school tax for the entire province, a promise that will cost the Treasury about $700 million, but will mean more money in the pocket of citizens. And while this election pledged to tear up the agreement signed by the Liberals with Quebec's medical specialist was replaced by the words adjust in his speech, Legault repeated some of his more controversial ideas. He re-pledged plans to reduce the number of immigrants entering Quebec from 50,000 a year to 40,000 a year so they can be better integrated. For the first time, however, he linked the issue to Quebec's chronic labor shortages by saying the system to welcome new arrivals needs to be better linked to the job market. He said the government will increase the legal age to buy and consume weed from 18 to 21. We'll take partisan politics out of government nominations, as well as reform the electoral system. Legault also reaffirmed plans to replace school boards with service centers and abolish school board elections, as mentioned previously. And there was no wavering on the plan to bar authority figures from wearing religious symbols like the hijab or kippah. Legault told the House, "The wearing of religious symbols will be banned for state employees in positions of authority, including elementary and high school teachers. Ours is a responsible position. We will thus be firm on this subject, and we intend to move rapidly." Legault responded to critics who have complained his government doesn't care for the environment, saying Quebec's plan to export more clean hydropower represents a significant step towards reducing greenhouse gases. But the previous government had no real plan beyond setting a general target to reduce greenhouse gases by 2020. Today, nobody knows if this is even possible. Nonetheless, he said he is taking the issue seriously and the government will invest in more public transit, as well as step up the use of electric trains, buses, trucks, and cars. At the same time, he said if Quebec is serious about cutting gases, it must avoid the ideological speeches from people who argue all construction projects are bad. Legault did not meet the media after his remarks, but on his way into the legislature earlier in the day, he conceded some of the reforms his government wants to put in place may not sit well with everyone. He told reporters, "I think people want to change, but there will be no doubt that there will be resistance to these changes. But we'll do them in order. We will apply the program we promised in the election campaign." Late Wednesday, emerging from the legislature, the three opposition parties rapidly dismissed Legault's speech as a rehash of his electoral campaign. Interim Liberal leader Pierre Arcand said this session will be a reality check for the new government, and the speech was full of air. Lots of promises, little concrete action. He noted Legault made no mention of his promise to reduce emergency wait times to 90 minutes, nor how he will replace the $70 million in school board taxes the board are going to be asked to forego. At the same time, as Legault says he wants to help the education system, he wants to abolish school boards, which will create a lot of worry, Arcand added.
This has been Politics in Action on CGMQ 88.9 FM. I'm Anna, bringing you the latest on local political news. Thank you for listening.